Good Friday morning to you. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get the privilege to talk with a very special novel writer on the morning show. We have middle grade novelist Erin Entrada Kelly, and we're going to pick her brain about where she comes up with her ideas for her books. I learned that Erin keeps a notebook and writes down her ideas longhand. She scribbles them down as fast as she can, and she sketches out her characters' names and what might happen to them in the story. Do you write your stories this way in a notebook? Are you working on a story now? Do you think it'll be a book one day? Let's talk about it. Hear about your writing process. How are your ideas coming together? Here's the number. Get ready for it. 800-642-1234. Erin Entrada Kelly has won multiple awards for her fiction writing, including the Newbery Medal for her book called Hello Universe. And her favorite place in the world is the library. Erin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I'm going to get out of the way immediately because Lucia in Madison wants to ask the very first question. Hi, Lucia.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question for Erin?
I love Hello Universe. Where did you get the idea for the book? Did you know anyone that has happened to them, or did it just pop into your brain and you added more details as you went?
Thank you, Lucia. What a great question. So I didn't know anyone who that specifically happened to. So it's kind of the second one. I get an idea in my head. And in the case of Hello Universe, it started with Virgil. So almost all my ideas start with a character. And for Hello Universe, it started with Virgil. So as you know, since you read the book, Virgil is kind of the main character. There's different point of view characters in Hello Universe, but he's kind of the main person. And the reason why he came to me is because I wanted to write about a character who was shy. I wanted to write about a boy character who didn't live up to all the things that we imagine a boy should be. So he's not very athletic. He's not big and strong. He's really sensitive and shy and sweet. And I really wanted to write a book that celebrated all those aspects about being a boy. And whenever I started thinking about Virgil, I started thinking about what kind of kid is he? I do this with all my characters. I think, you know, what kind of person are they? What is their life like? And as those ideas and thoughts start to grow, the other characters start coming out of that initial idea. So it's kind of like a tree growing, and Virgil was the seed, and I planted it in the dirt, and then it grew, and all these branches came out of it. And that's kind of how it started. But Virgil, like all the characters I've written, there are pieces of me in all of my characters. So the novelist Laura Ruby, one of my favorite writers, she says, she is everyone and she is no one in the books, in the characters that she writes. And that's how I feel, too, because I was a lot like Virgil when I was growing up.
Hey, Lucia.
What a great question.
Yeah, Lucia, are you still there?
Yeah.
What do you think about the book, Hello Universe?
I loved it. I thought it was really good. And I really loved the idea of, like, two different points of view of the story.
Did you identify with any characters in the story? Did you have a favorite character?
I think my character, I don't really remember it, but the girl with the younger sister.
Yes, that's Kaori. Kaori Tanaka.
What?
Her name is Kaori Tanaka, and she's the girl that has the sister. She's the fortune teller. Is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah.
Yep, that's her.
How do you come up with these characters, Erin?
So usually, you know, after I have that initial idea of a character and I kind of plant it in the dirt and it grows, I start doing the same thing with all the characters that come out of it. So I think about this one character and the world they live in and the people that they know. And as these other characters start to grow, I start thinking about them and the people that they know and what it's like to walk in the world as themselves. So that's kind of how it all comes together. And I actually do an exercise, a writing exercise with each of my characters, where I ask myself, you know, not just what are their character traits, but also, you know, what do they want? What do they really want out of life? So with Virgil in the book, he wants to talk to Valencia, who is a girl in his class that he's too shy to speak to. But what he really wants underneath that is he doesn't want to be so alone because he doesn't really have any friends. And he just wants someone, he just wants a friend. He doesn't want to feel so alone in life. So I do that with all my characters. And then I think about what are the things that are preventing them from getting the things that they want, because that's where the real stories come through. I mean, if we think about books that we love, movies, television shows, it's always about characters who are trying to get something and they have to overcome things to get what they want. So I spend a lot of time thinking about all those elements, and that's kind of how the stories come to be.
We're talking with Erin Entrada Kelly about her books, her writing process, her stories, and how you can write too. Do you read Erin's books? Which one is your favorite? And have you been writing lately about anything that you're going through? What are you writing about? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Erin, let's talk about your new book out, We Dream of Space. It's about these siblings growing up and waiting for the launch of the Challenger space shuttle in 1986. I identified so much because I was 12 when during this launch and the explosion. Can you tell us about this idea?
Sure. So, I think something about the Challenger disaster has stayed with me. I think for the obvious reasons, because of the tragedy, because of the excitement that surrounded it before it happened. But also, I think because it was the first major news story of my lifetime. So I was 9 when it happened. And I remember very vividly, you know, all the excitement and the buildup to this big seminal moment. And I remember when that moment went terribly wrong. And you know, at that age, of course, I was very sad and I thought about it a lot. But at that age, I didn't quite appreciate yet the magnitude or the emotional resonance, you know, that event would have on U.S. society as a whole. And another thing that I find interesting about it is, you know, at the time, the 24-hour news cycle was very, very new. CNN was new. So we didn't have news all day, every day. And of course, there was no social media. So the largest group of people who actually watched the launch live were school children. And that's very fascinating and compelling for lots of different reasons. But that kind of stayed with me. And I decided that I wanted to write a story that was set in 1986, also for the nostalgia factor, of course, because I was a child in 1986. And I thought about, you know, hope out of tragedy, you know, and what the launch meant for some young people. Now in the book, the three siblings, the book is really about family and these three siblings who are, you know, I describe them as orbits, planets moving in their own orbits. So these three kids live in this household, but everyone's kind of separated. Their parents are caught up in their own arguments and drama. And these three siblings are very much unmoored and feeling very alone. And each of them have the same, they're all in seventh grade together. Two of them are twins and one has failed seventh grade. So they're all in seventh grade together. The one thing they have in common is a seventh grade science teacher who's very excited about the launch. So she builds her curriculum around the impending launch. And the book takes place over just the month of January, 1986. Mm. And the three of them are, you know, it's approaching. And Bird, the girl, the daughter, the girl character, is very excited because she wants to be an astronaut. And her brothers are not as excited about it. So as it grows, the relationship grows and we're all building toward this momentum. And what's going to happen after this impending tragedy strikes?
We're visiting with novelist Erin Entrada Kelly this hour. You can join in. Is there a tricky situation in your life that you've been journaling about, writing about? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hear that song? It's called Blackbird by the Beatles. We're talking with author Erin Entrada Kelly, and she found inspiration in that song for her middle grade book called Blackbird Fly. A girl named Apple gets teased, gets bullied at school, but she has big dreams to be a rock star one day, play the song Blackbird, just like Paul McCartney of the Beatles. The book is partially inspired by Erin's life, being the only Filipina American in her school growing up. How are you writing about things in your life? What inspires you to write or draw or make other kinds of art? Join in. Here's the number, 800-642-1234. And Erin Entrada Kelly is talking with us for the hour. So, Erin, let's look a little bit more about your life growing up, being kind of the only kid in your school who looked like you. What was that like?
It was, you know, it's hard to tell what came first. My feelings of sadness and loneliness and the feeling of otherness, or was it the other way around? You know, I think of that a lot because when I was growing up, as early as elementary school, I can remember being a very sad and lonely kid. And part of the reason for that is that I did feel like an outsider and other. So I'm biracial. My mom's Filipino. My father's white. And so I wasn't quite Filipino. You know, in my head, I wasn't quite Filipino, but I wasn't quite white. And I wasn't quite like anyone else in my school. So no one knew quite what to make of me. So when I was growing up, I got asked all the time, what are you and where are you really from? And these are questions that I didn't really have an answer to. And I think especially when we're young and especially when we're young people who don't have much self-confidence or self-esteem, we take what people tell us about ourselves and we use that to inform our own self-image. And I did that a lot when I was growing up. So if people told me I wasn't pretty enough or I wasn't smart enough or I wasn't fill in the blank enough, I took that to be true and I really used it to inform how I felt about myself. And it's a very exhausting and lonely way to live. And I'm sure there's people out there listening who know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, when you're young, you're trying to figure out exactly who you are. And one way you try to figure that out is by how other people are reacting to you or what other people are telling you about yourself, when really you just have to look within, right? But when I was young, I didn't have the tools or the ability to see that. And that's a large part of the inspiration for Blackbird Fly, because I wanted to write a book that young people could read who are feeling that and going through that, whether it's a cultural, whatever their identity struggles are. I just wanted to write a book that tells them, you know, you're not alone. There are other kids out there. There are other people out there who have felt the way you feel, who have felt inadequate or have not felt good enough and have tried to change to fit other people's, you know, image of what you should be. But when we do that, it still doesn't feel right because we know we're not being true to ourselves. So I wanted to write a book that celebrated self-acceptance. And that's kind of where Blackbird Fly came from, my first book.
Erin, did you feel like you had any allies, any people you could confide in? And did that translate over into your writing?
That's a great question. So I had, you know, I've always been a person who has, you know, one or two really best friends. I feel like there's two kind of people. There's people who have a large gaggle of friends, and then there's people who have one or two really, really close friends. And that's how I was growing up. And even though I confided in them about just about everything, this struggle I was going through growing up, I didn't really have the words to even explain or identify exactly all my feelings. I think some of that takes perspective and some of that takes a lot of self-awareness that I didn't necessarily have. And whenever I wrote books, I approached it when I was growing up, when I was young, and I've always wanted to be a writer and I was writing books. I did it mostly as an escape. So I sat down and I had this idea that I loved to read and reading books were an escape. And I realized if I just had paper, I could write my own books because all books are words on paper, you know? So I got paper.
Yeah.
I can do this. I can be Judy Blume and I can put words down and I can make the world just as I want it to be. And that idea is, you know, there's so little we can control, but that idea was really fascinating to me. I can make anything up that I want. Anything is possible on the page.
We're talking with author Erin Entrada Kelly about her books, her writing, her stories, how you can write too with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Erin, you also venture into a fantasy novel with Lalani of the Distant Sea. What took you there?
So Lalani of the Distant Sea was definitely a departure because all my previous books were realistic fiction. And what happened was I actually was working on We Dream of Space in early 2016. And after the election happened and the world was kind of tilted on its axis in many, many different ways, I felt compelled to write a different story. And the thing about fantasy that is so intriguing and compelling is that we can build our own worlds that allow us to explore the issues that we want to explore in the way that the real world doesn't. So I created this society, San Laguita, in Lalani of the Distant Sea. And I created a character because, of course, it always comes down to character, Lalani. And Lalani is a very quite ordinary 12-year-old girl, scrawny 12-year-old girl. She's not magical. She's certainly not the smartest, cleverest, or most beautiful girl in the village. She second guesses herself a lot. So she's basically me. And I decided, you know, when I was growing up, the kids that were going on adventures, I mean, if you look at a lot of fantasy, especially Western fantasy that we grow up reading, the kids that go on adventures are like the chosen, destined children, or the ones who are brave and want to go out and fight the dragon. And I wanted to write about a character who is just very ordinary, just like everyone else. The one superpower she has, if you can call it that, and we should, is empathy and compassion. She loves her community. Sometimes they don't even love her back, but she loves them. She loves her mother. She loves her friends. And those are the things that compel her to go on a quest, a dangerous quest, to save the people that she loves. And that's kind of how Lalani came to be.
Well, let's take another call. Let's go to Sharon now, joining us from Minocqua this morning. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning. What a wonderful program. I was calling basically because your guest sounds so much like myself in some ways. I unfortunately didn't turn out to be a successful author like she is, but I'm also biracial, and I kind of grew up, kind of experienced some things that she expressed earlier in the program, you know, not being accepted or being perceived as sort of the other. And it was somewhat of a challenging childhood, but I don't regret it at all. But the one thing that I do distinctly remember is that I always felt like I was the observer. I was watching and observing people. And not really a full participant in what was going on in my childhood. But as an observer, and I don't know if your author felt, if your guest felt this way, but in that sort of story, you know, because I was the observer, I was always creating stories in my head.
Yeah.
And that way, in some ways, if your guest felt that way, it's what may have contributed to her becoming an author, where she could be creative and living in her world, but, you know, capturing all this information about people and their behavior and their personalities by being the observer.
Oh, Sharon, thank you for bringing that. Erin, what do you think?
So I'm nodding this whole time as Sharon is speaking, because I definitely understand what she means. And I think one of the things that I actually struggle with as an author is, because I write books where the characters are often lonely and introspective and have a rich interior life, it can be tricky because they are observers in many ways, just like Sharon is saying, and just like I was. And the problem with being an observer in fiction is that your characters have to be doing things, right? I mean, nobody wants to read a whole book where someone's observing. So I have to think about, how am I going to incorporate this introspectiveness of my characters and this quality of observation that Sharon's talking about, and this feeling of otherness and this feeling of isolation, and still make my characters you know, someone that my readers can relate to, but also make them active in their lives in whatever the way that means for them, you know, so that it, so that things happen, actually happen on the page. But I am absolutely, you know, I was nodding the whole time as Sharon was speaking, and I wouldn't interrupt with my agreements, but mm-hmm. I'm just nodding over here because I felt the same way. Yeah. And you know, when you're young, you already feel like an other, no matter where you're from or what you look like. Right. And so sometimes there's just these added layers that make it all the more difficult.
Author Erin Entrada Kelly with us, telling about her writing, where she gets her inspiration, and all of that observation in those special notebooks she writes in. Are you filling notebooks with ideas? Are you a fan of Erin's books? I loved The Land of Forgotten Girls. It's set in Louisiana. Are you working on writing a YA novel yourself? How is it going? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Erin right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Thank you for joining us here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What a pleasure that we can talk with award-winning middle grade author Erin Entrada Kelly for the hour. We're picking her brain about the writing process, where she comes up with her ideas for her books. Her sixth novel is out now. It's called We Dream of Space. What questions do you have about the process of writing a novel? Do you like to read? What are your favorite books of all time? What do you want to know about the life of an author? Join in. Here's the number to call, 800-642-1234. Let's take another call now. Sue is with us from La Crosse. Hi, Sue.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a question or a comment about the desire to write a book. And all my life, I've been told, you need to write. I journal. I've sent a lot of letters to people, you know, things like that. And my question is, I think I'm drawn, and this is after a lifetime of living, to write about some traumatic growing up and some issues that I wouldn't want people to know who I'm talking about, but yet I want to use that in a book. And I feel like a novel wouldn't be the way to go. And I'm just wondering, how do you write to your reality, your growing up, and keep it safe?
That's a great question. And there's a couple different ways to think about it. So in writing about something that's difficult and maybe you don't want, you know, living family members or people to identify themselves in the work. This is something that comes up a lot because I also teach in an MFA, in MFA programs. And for me, whenever I want to write, when I want to use my personal experience to inform my writing, but I don't necessarily want to make it a memoir, we'll say, I will change things so that I feel distanced from the character. For example, with Blackbird Fly, it's very much influenced by my growing up, and Apple is very, very similar to myself, but I changed some things about her. So instead of books and writing, for her, it's music. And instead of having a big dream to be an author like Judy Blume, which was my dream, Apple's dream is to be like George Harrison. And I changed some of her family dynamics. So I made these changes so that Apple doesn't become me, but I'm still able to use my experiences to inform her. So that's one way to go. But if you feel like a novel doesn't quite feel right and you don't want to, you don't want to take that route, the other option, of course, is to write a memoir. And the issue with memoirs is if you write them while people are still around to read them, it's very difficult to get around that issue. So then you have to make a decision of what is more important for you as a writer or a creator. Another option is to just sit down and write and don't even worry about, actually, this is what I would suggest. Don't even worry about those questions. Don't even worry about what if so-and-so sees this, or what if uncle, what's his name, you know, reads this and sees, you know, this experience on the page. Just sit down and write. And even if it goes nowhere, even if it just stays in your journal, it's so therapeutic, and it's writing for yourself. And maybe it becomes something, maybe it doesn't become anything, but it doesn't matter because no word is wasted that's put on the page. It's just for yourself. And nothing really bad can come from that. So That's what I would suggest, is to just sit down and see where your pen takes you or where your keyboard takes you and worry about those questions later.
Sue, thank you for that question. Erin, we heard you keep notebooks and you write longhand as you work through your books and starting out. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. I've been writing that way since I was 8 years old when I wrote my very first book. I've always put pencil or pen to paper. It just feels more personal to me. You know, you go to the store, you choose a notebook, you feel the pen on the paper, you smell the ink, you hear the pages turning. I mean, for me, it's evoking every sensory quality we have in our bodies. And that makes it more alive for me. I mean, writers are all different. I know writers who write on their phones. I would never be able to do that. I have to have the notebook.
And so when you fill a notebook, do you then type it into your computer? How do you transition it?
Yes. So what I usually do is I have my notebook and I'll write about 3 to 5 chapters in longhand. And then I'll sit down and I'll type it all up. I'll transfer it. And when I do that, what happens is I wind up adding things or building scenes or building characters that weren't there in longhand. So it's almost as if my notebook is kind of a skeletal draft, almost draft zero. And then whenever I sit down and type it in, it becomes even more robust.
Oh, it becomes almost like the next draft of it.
Yes, exactly. So it's kind of like the notebook is zero draft, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then my typing it up is like draft one. And then I'll go back to the notebook. So after I type up, you know, the 3 to 5 chapters, then I'll go back to the notebook. Because sometimes I discover new things, you know, through that process. And then I go back to the notebook and then continue on.
How does the editing process go for you? And then when you're working with an editor, I'm sure they have some ideas that they want to contribute.
They do. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions about publishing is that an editor takes your book and then turns it into something else that you didn't want, right? But a strong editor, as I've had with all my books, really respects the author's creative vision. And rather than go in and mark things and say, this needs to happen here, or you need to get rid of this character here, she asks questions. And that's the same thing I do with my students. And I've kind of learned that from my editor. She asks questions that make me think so that the creative process is organic on my end. So she may say, why is the character doing this? Or is this really what a 12-year-old would think or say? And then it's up to me to figure out how to fix the issue. So I actually really love the editing process because I feel like, you know, nothing that I write is obviously going to be perfect right off the bat, although I'd like to imagine it is. It's not. And so that's when the real magic comes out of the manuscript, is through that process of going back and forth. You know, writing is very solid, but publishing is a team effort.
We're talking with author Erin Entrada Kelly about her books, her writing process, and where her stories lead. You can join in with your process as well, what you are writing. Maybe you're working on a young adult novel. How is it going? How is the plot working out for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Erin, I understand you brought us a writing exercise that we can try out. What is it?
I did. Okay, so this is something you can do. If you have a notebook, then you know you don't need one, but please open it if you do. So this is an exercise that I do when I visit schools, and the kids absolutely love it. And what we do is we build a story together. So how it starts is, because a lot of people ask, how do I get started? Or I can't think of anything to write. So this is what I do. I ask them, because everything with me is character, starts with character. So I ask them to think of a character and just write down their name and their age. So after you have their name and their age, and that's all you have, write down 5 character traits, 5 things about this character that you just invented, which how cool is that? You can just evoke someone right into existence on the page. So maybe they're impatient and rash, or maybe they're independent or kind or funny, whatever those are. So write 5 of those down. And after you have those 5, write down 5 things that character is afraid of, and try to think of things that are external, things like heights or spiders or intruders or whatever it is, but also try to think of some internal conflicts as well, internal fears, like never having a parent's approval or not doing well in school or not feeling good enough, and kind of making a mix of those two things. So then you have a character's name and age. You have five character traits about them. And then you have five things that you're afraid of. And now the way we build our story is to think about those five things they're afraid of and figure out. You also want to write down five things that they want. So that's the third part. Mm-hmm. Five character traits, five things they're afraid of, and five things they want. It could be a girl or a boy that they're into. It could be a treasure at the end of the rainbow, whatever it is. Five things that they want. Now you want to sit down and think about how those five things they're afraid of can get in the way or will get in the way of the five things that they want, right?
So well, if they're you're afraid creating of spiders, some tension or conflict.
Exactly, right? So if your character is on a quest, let's say, and they're afraid of spiders and they want to get the pot at the end of the rainbow, maybe there's a pit of spiders standing between them and the pot at the end of the rainbow, whatever it is, internal and external fears. And try to think of ways that you can put those roadblocks between them and the things that they want. And then as you're doing that, think about those character traits you wrote down and how does that help or hinder your character as they're going through this journey. And when you start doing that, a story starts to build and it kind of becomes that tree I talked about. And you're able to think about, oh, okay, well, maybe this can happen and that can happen. You know, we should always be asking, what if this happened? What if that happened? And you can be as ridiculous as you want. It's your own story, right? And then you can edit it and pare it down however you wish. You can make it bigger and bolder. You know, it's all the page is all yours. That's what's so wonderful about creating anything.
And maybe you know that character very well because it perhaps is a reflection of you and your life.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we use ourselves all the time as writers to inform our characters, right? So you can have character traits in there that are very similar to yours. You know, maybe your character has a short attention span or a fiery temper and think about the things that they can do and how they would react in the different situations you put them in because of those character traits. And you'll notice that the things that make us our so-called positive and negative character traits really speak to each other and make us who we are at the end of the day, right? Mm. Or at the end of the story, as the case may be.
We're talking with author Erin Entrada Kelly and her books, her writing process. She's helping us build stories. What are you dreaming about? Who do your characters reflect? And what are their internal conflicts? Still time to talk with Erin about projects. Here's the number, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking with middle school novel writer Erin Entrada Kelly. She says, you know, it sounds cliche, but to be an author, just keep writing. Just keep at it because like anything, it's practice. That's how you perfect your craft. Do you write a lot or have you started to sketch in a journal? Do you think you could turn it into your next novel, working on character development? Talk with Erin about your plan. Here's the number, 800-642-1234. Let's take another call now. Nikki is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love writing and I love English. It's been a passion of mine since I was about 10, 11 years old. I've always had notebooks and journals full of poetry and different little sketches and ideas. So this idea that I had actually started about 10, 11 years ago, my junior year in high school, we were given the assignment to write a short story. And the short story ended up turning into like my personal baby. And I've been working on it and constantly working on it, going back to my first copy that I turned into my teacher. I have a notebook that I restarted writing into it, and it's even on my computer. The same things that you had previously were talking about. So my question really was, how long did it take you to get your first story down? And then where did you, once you felt like you were, this was it and that was your final draft. Where did you take it next?
Great question. So for my first book that was published, Blackbird Fly, I would say it took maybe a solid, we'll say 4 to 5 years to get it down to where I wanted it. And after you have the story down and you feel like, okay, there's no more I can do with this, I've taken it to the best of my ability, and I think I'm ready to, you know, escort it into the world of publishing. The first step is to find an agent. And there's many different ways that that happens. Some people go to writing conferences and they meet agents there. For me, I did it a pretty standard way, which is you just send out a query letter, which is a very tightly written one-page letter telling the agent about your book. And you send it out to any number of agents. And when an agent feels very excited about your work, what they'll do is offer representation. And finding an agent is often the most difficult part of the publishing process because they get so many manuscripts, sometimes upwards of 1,000 manuscripts every month from writers. And whenever they take on a client, they want to take on someone whose work they feel they can really sell, because they don't make money unless they sell your manuscript. And that's kind of what starts the ball rolling, because then the agent works as an intermediary between the author and the editor at the publishing house. So then my agent took it to different publishers, and ultimately I got an offer from HarperCollins, where I've been for the past 6 books. All my books are published through HarperCollins. So that's kind of the journey that it takes.
And so once you establish that, you have that agent, and now you have your books through that publisher, do you find that it gets perhaps a little bit easier once you've established that road to that publisher?
That's a great question. And I think it really depends on the author. It's everyone's path is so different. For me, I've been very fortunate that my first publisher, my first editor, we have a really great relationship. I have an incredible agent. And also I have no shortage of ideas at any time. So my brain is full. Instead of writer's block, I have what I call writer's storm, where I have too many things happening in my brain. So I'm always working on something. I think one of the best pieces of advice for people who want to survive in publishing is to always work on something, because publishing has a lot of long lag times of waiting for something to happen, waiting for your edits, waiting for your book jacket, waiting for this, waiting for a response. So if you're always working on something and you always have your eyes forward on what's next, it really helps you, with the momentum, so that you don't get too bogged down and disenchanted, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on a lot of factors.
Yeah. Nikki, thank you for the call. Dana is listening and emailed us this morning. Dana says they are an aspiring author currently collecting lots of rejections. And Dana asks, how do I know when to keep going and when it's time to give up?
Oh, that is such a great question. Of course, I adhere to the adage of never give up. but the thing that I found is to really rethink how we approach rejections. And by that, I mean, I started off with short stories, and I actually have a rejection note framed right here next to me on my desk.
Oh.
And it says, "Fine writing. We cannot offer publication, but you were on the short list." And even though it's a rejection, I knew at that time that I was getting closer and closer. So I would say the rejections, if they offer feedback or insight, really take them in and think about what it means for your work, and if it's something useful that you can use to improve the next time around. And I would also say another thing to keep spirits high, I found writing groups can really help with that, and sharing your work with other writers so that you can continue improving, because there's really nothing to lose by going forward, Dana, right? If you give up, then it surely won't happen. But if you keep going, there's really nothing to lose, because I really believe that when we create something and put it out into the universe, really no harm can come from that, except for maybe blows to our self-ego, which definitely happens. But if you can arm yourself with, a great writer's group, or just positive self-talk, and always work on improving. I mean, I still do. And I already have books in the world, right? So That's what I would say.
We're talking with author Erin Entrada Kelly about her books. And Erin, I don't want to get this hour to an end unless we talk about The Land of Forgotten Girls. I just found your scene setting is just so exquisite because, you know, we can talk about character development, but you can really get at a scene to me and make me feel like I'm there. And in particular in Louisiana, I mean, I feel the heat in your books, the concrete, and it's not just these beautiful stereotypical pictures of sunsets over the bayou. How do you set a scene?
Oh, thank you for that. I'm so glad you brought up Land of Forgotten Girls because it's actually my favorite of my books.
Oh, good.
I don't know if it's apropos because most authors say that they don't have a favorite, but that is my favorite one. So not to sound like a broken record, but it really does come back to character again for me because when I'm writing a scene, and thank you for saying that because I always think that scene setting is one of my weaknesses. I don't like that word, but one of the things I have to work on. And what I usually do is I really, because I'm walking around as that character in their shoes, I channel everything through them. So it always comes back to character for me. So if Soledad, who's the narrator in Land of Forgotten Girls, is walking down the sidewalk, then I'm really walking with her. So I'm going to see what she sees and feel what she feels. And I'm going to eat a popsicle like she does and all these different things. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how the scene unfolds through that character.
So when you have all these stories in your head and right now we've had the pandemic keeping us at home, how do you keep your strength going in writing and keep sitting down and doing it each day?
So, well, one thing is that I don't necessarily do it each day because some days I just don't feel like writing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. One thing I almost always feel like doing, though, is reading. So I read a lot, you know, upwards of 3 books a week or a book every other day. I've spent most of my time reading. Another thing, you know, I love teaching. So also, you know, kind of immersing myself into other people's work is another way to inspire me, but also not drain my creative well, if you will, because I can spend time outside of my head and outside of my manuscript. So I do that through reading books by authors that I love. And I also do it by reading works of other writers in progress. So that's kind of how I try to keep the momentum going that way.
Oh, Erin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a great, the hour flew by, I feel like.
Erin Entrada Kelly is an author. Her latest book is called We Dream of Space. And just ahead, it is On Point with a weekly roundtable of discussions. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.